All right, good morning. So glad we could be together. Happy 4th of July weekend. I know that there are some of our partners in the gospel, our church family, that are right through that camera. I see you. So, and not only because they couldn't be here because of health and concerns and whatnot, but because they're out of town. There are a few families that I reached out to make sure that they knew that I was recording the live stream and would be checking to see if they tuned in from the beach or from wherever they are. Just kidding. No, serious. I'm going to follow up with them this week. But anyways, hey, I actually did want to just welcome you all. I wanted to welcome a few particular people. I know just walking in this morning, I saw Anthony. Are you in here right now, Anthony? Oh, he's in the balcony. Okay, yeah, Anthony lives in New Jersey now. But man, just one of the first kids that was part of our youth ministry here. And I see all these other kids, you know, because you invited them and started out with Ethan mentoring you at Ligon through our mentor program. And so we love you, man. Hope you're doing well up there in New Jersey and up there in the balcony this morning. you know, I just heard as well that last night, one of our elders, Jack, and his wife, Jane, had a dinner, and they did a membership interview. We call those partnership interviews with Jordan and Beatrice Prutzman. So just you know, the church has not been closed during coronavirus. People are getting more connected, taking their next steps, getting involved, and everybody's at a different step in the process. It's not like that's the only significant step to take. We want you to worship. We want you to attend. We want you to serve. We want you to partner, though, really, because we are partners in the gospel. So are you here, Jordan? I know you're here because you're playing drums. Jordan and Beatrice, yeah, congratulations on that. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal. It is. I can remember when I was in grad school, just joining a church for the first time. When I grew up in the church, but joining a church for the first time when it wasn't because my parents are like, "Hey, get in the car," but it's like my decision. And I remember feeling the weight of that. Like, this is a significant deal. And of course, we all know that the healthy church that you're a part of makes a big difference in your life. I mean, hello? Of course. So we know that when you make that decision to be part of that reality that's going to make a big difference in your life, that is a big decision. And so I could talk for a while about it, but oh, and then also, even bigger, Jonathan and Nicole are here, and you know, Jonathan and his wife Nicole are here from Joliet, Illinois, outside of Chicago, just moved here last week on, was it Wednesday? Got in, Penske moving truck, group of like seven people from their church that they were at in Illinois came down here with them and moved them in, and they told me, got them all settled. I think all their pictures are hung, and they're ready to have you over for dinner. So I just want to tell you. But we're so glad you're here. Jonathan's our new associate pastor, and he starts tomorrow. And so it's really an answer to prayer. We believe God's led you to this church, and we're excited. So. All right, let's close in prayer. I want to go to 2 Samuel chapter 9 this morning to continue our sermon series, looking at King David, a man after God's heart. Okay? We've looked at his courage against Goliath. We've looked at his friendship with Jonathan. We've looked at his integrity. We've looked at different aspects of David's life and how that points us to Christ. And we've talked about that. But I want this morning to look at his heart of loving kindness. His heart of loving kindness. You've heard of Ray Charles, right? And maybe Stevie Wonder. Significant thing about those two is that they both lost their sight and they both were amazing musicians. Well, I was reading an article about a guy named Kyle, and I'll just read to you a little bit about him because I'd heard of these famous musicians, but not of Kyle, but I want to share with you about Kyle. Though blind since birth, Kyle never lost sight of his passion for learning, teaching, and playing music. Born prematurely at 23 weeks, given a 10% chance of survival, Kyle, now 28 years old, defied all odds and is currently making a career out of doing what he loves, teaching music. A few other things about Kyle. They asked him, "How have you made a difference in the life of your students, Kyle?" And he said, "I had a student memorize the entire word I can't pronounce in a short time. She would later tell me that I changed her life for the better, and she would never have another teacher like me. She wanted to make a difference in people's lives just as I had made in hers." And Kyle said, and I quote, "I enjoy sharing my story since I want people to realize that you do not have to see to be a successful teacher." Okay. I share with you about Kyle's story because, as we just saw, against all of the world's odds, Kyle received and shared with others an ability, dare I even say a transformational ability, to play, to enjoy, to teach music. And today's big sermon idea of this passage is that against all odds of this world, you and I can receive and share God's transformational loving kindness. I want to show you that because I think that's really the big idea of this passage. It's a story of Mephibosheth, and we'll talk about him. But let me read 2 Samuel chapter 9 and pray, and we're going to dive into our message this morning. There are 3 points, of course. chapter 9. "And David said, 'Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?' Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and they called him to David, and the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' And he said, 'I am your servant.' And the king said, 'Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?' Ziba said to the king, 'There is still a son of Jonathan. He's crippled in his feet.' The king said to him, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'He's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar.' Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, 'Mephibosheth.' And he answered, 'Behold, I am your servant.' And David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always.' And he paid homage and said, 'What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?' Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, 'All that belonged to Saul and to all the house, his house, I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table.' Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, 'According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do.' So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son, whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet." All right, let me pray. Lord, we thank you for your kindness, for your loving kindness that you showed to David, that David then shared with Mephibosheth. And Lord, that to many of us, you have shown to us that we may honor you and glorify you and share with others that same loving kindness. Lord, open our eyes to see it more clearly today. From your truth, from the word of God. And we turn our attention there with your help now. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. I really kind of have 2 goals this morning in this sermon. One is I really want to make you really aware of an important concept in the Bible, this idea of God's loving kindness. So I'm going to spend some time defining this word. I want you to leave like, I am now a Christian that knows all about that word. Like, that's one of my goals. The other goal is I want you and me and all of us to sort of have this moment where we see, wow, I can receive God's loving kindness and share it with others. Like, I can do that. I can receive the transformational loving kindness of God, share it with others. So we have an outline, 3 points, simple. I'm going to give a definition of God's loving kindness. If you're taking notes, you can write GLK, God's loving kindness. We're going to have that as our first point, a definition. Our second point, an illustration. And this whole story is that illustration, okay? We'll study it. There are 3 points under the illustration as we break that story up. And then the third and final point, which we need to do, is application of God's loving kindness, all right? So let's talk about God's loving kindness. I want to define it because in this story, we see this word 3 times, but this word, God's loving kindness, is in the Bible many times. It's the Hebrew word chesed, and I'll give you an opportunity to say it because it's always fun to learn Hebrew in church. It's like, starts with a K, like kangaroo, okay? Chesed. Just say it, please. Just humor me. Chesed, learning Hebrew together. Right. That word is in the Bible 225 times in the Old Testament, 128 times in the Psalms because David loved it. It's 12 times in 2 Samuel, it's 3 times in our passage this morning. It means loving kindness. It is translated steadfast love. It is translated loyalty. This is a word that uniquely refers to the covenant-keeping love of God for his people, okay? One scholar says, God's chesed, or covenant love, it combines the warmth of God's fellowship with the security of his faithfulness. Chesed love is one-way love, author Paul Miller says. Love without an exit strategy. When you love with chesed love, you bind yourself to the object of your love no matter what the response is. It's one-way love. It's love that burns its passport. It's steadfast, committed, loyal love. This is God's loving kindness. We see this all through the Old Testament. I want to give you some examples from the Psalms. Psalm 23, verse 6. Surely, goodness and chesed follow me all the days of my life. Psalm 26:3, your chesed, your loving kindness is before my eyes. 32:10, your loving kindness surrounds me. 33:5, the earth is full of the chesed of God. 36:5, it extends to the heavens. 51, verse 1, David, after sinning, says, have mercy on me according to your, you guessed it, loving kindness. 63, verse 3, your loving kindness is better than life. 90:14, satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness. It's really amazing. In the book of Deuteronomy, verse 7, or chapter 7, verse 9, I'll show you one place where this word is. It says, know therefore that the Lord your God is God, the faithful God who keeps covenant and steadfast love, that's loving kindness, that's chesed, with those who love him to keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. Think about 1,000 generations. I don't know what the average lifespan is, 80 years, 80 times 1,000 generations. God's loving kindness. In 2 Samuel 7, and we looked at this last week, God makes this covenant with David. This covenant with David that will be a forever covenant with him, which ultimately we will ride to Jesus Christ. But In 2 Samuel 7, it says this, "The Lord declares to you that the Lord will make you a house, David. When your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring after you, who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom." And look at it, "My steadfast love will not depart from him, as I took it from Saul, whom I put away before you." And so, again, one of my goals, I want us to all know about this word. This should not be a secret. This is such an important concept in the Bible, God's loving kindness. And again, as I said, this term is used three times in our passage in 2 Samuel chapter 9 that we're looking at today about Mephibosheth. And so this chapter is a great illustration for us of God's loving kindness, which is our second point, illustration of God's loving kindness. And we're going to start here with verses 1 through 4, and we're just going to look at some statements of what we see the loving kindness of God is from this chapter. What's its nature? What does it do? The action of God's loving kindness. And so our first point is this: it is otherworldly and faithful, and it seeks me out. God's loving kindness is that. David comes into his palace and he's thinking of what to do next as a king. He's made this great covenant with God in chapter 7. In chapter 8, he's defeated all of his enemies, and he's like, "What do I do now?" And he says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look for a Saulite. I'm going to look for someone who is a descendant of the rival political party, and I'm going to look for a way to show not just niceness to them, but the loving kindness of God to them. That's what I'm going to do." And it says in verse 1, he asks the question, "Is there anyone in the house of Saul still around that I might show him?" You know what his officials were thinking when he said show him, right? Show him, they're like, yeah, like an execution, right? Yeah, yes, like the door to prison. He's like, "Show him," long pause, officials think they know what he's going to say. Loving kindness. They're like, "Oh yeah, there's a servant. This guy named Ziba. He's kind of like more manly. He's got like all these sons. We'll go get Ziba." So they go get Ziba. And Ziba, besides just having one of the coolest names in the Bible, comes in there, and David's like, "Ziba, nice to meet you. Is there an actual descendant of Saul?" And Ziba's like, "Oh, thought I was going to get the loving kindness." He still will. But he's like, "Yeah, there is." Still thinking of a way maybe that he could get the loving kindness. He's like, "But he's like really crippled." And David's like, "Go get him. Where is he?" It's interesting. I want to show you a verse in 1 Samuel 20, verses 14 through 15. We studied this, but just a reminder. David and Jonathan had made a covenant. We talked about this under our biblical friendship sermon. They had made a covenant. And I'm going to go back to these verses just so you can see it. Jonathan says to David, "If I'm still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die." But then he says, "And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever. When the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." They had a covenant friendship. And so David understands the impact of a covenant. And it's not, you know, like a sort of like maybe kind of type of commitment. It's like, "I'm committed to this. And so I need to find a way to live out this loving kindness covenant that I've made." And so 15, 20 years later, that's where we are in this time frame. He's like, "Is there a descendant of Jonathan that I might fulfill my word to them?" It's really amazing. There's no hesitancy. He could have said, "Times have really changed." And how many people would have said, "You're right." He could have said, "That was just a formality. I mean, that was just between Jonathan and I. That was sort of like assuming some other things, like that he was still around. He's not around." How many of us can place ourselves there and would think, yeah, I'd probably sign off on that? It's interesting that it says Mephibosheth was crippled in his feet. We only know of that from 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. When Jonathan and Saul died, the descendants of Saul panicked because they understood that common practice was that the new king would come in and exterminate all the ancestors who would rival the throne of the old king. And so the nurse panicked, grabbed baby Mephibosheth, started carrying him out of the house. It's all in 2 Samuel 4, verse 4. You can turn there right now if you want to. And she dropped him. And he was crippled in both feet from that day forward. Okay. The writer of 2 Samuel, in these verses, is showing Israel, who would have been reading 2 Samuel long before Fellowship Raleigh, he's showing Israel, God's people, life in the kingdom of God is radically different and otherworldly. What King David is doing here is counterintuitive and totally otherworldly. Contemporaries like Agamemnon of the kingdom of Troy, these are contemporaries relatively of the time of David, or Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, or one of the dynasties in China around this time, which were very big. The Philistines, the Moabites, the Egyptians, all contemporaries of David. None of them would have handled this situation that way. They would have cleared house of the descendants of the previous dynasty. Mephibosheth, and if not he himself with his crippled feet, certainly his healthier descendants would be considered a serious political threat from a rival dynasty. Just a few people would need to die for one of Mephibosheth's relatives to say, you know what, they had it wrong. We're the original kingship. And so, he's a political threat from a rival dynasty, from the other party. It would have been advisable, acceptable, and common practice in that day, and dare I say, even in our day, to eliminate him. That's why Mephibosheth was hiding. That's why he got hurt with his feet. It's the same today, isn't it, in politics or even in corporate acquisitions? But it's not the same in the church. Life in the kingdom is different. It's otherworldly. And that's the point. We're illustrating God's loving kindness here. And the first thing to see is that it is otherworldly and it's faithful and it seeks me out. Look at how David is seeking out Mephibosheth. Certainly, as Christians, this makes us think about how Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And how we are treated not as we deserve, as members of a rebel family and race, but we are treated according to His loving kindness. It's amazing. So this illustration of God's loving kindness, the first part of it, it's otherworldly, it's faithful, it seeks me out. The second part of it is this: it is costly and generous, and it lifts me up. It seeks me out, and it lifts me up. Look at this. So King David comforts this terrified Mephibosheth who's brought before him. How does he comfort him? He confers on him, as a king would do. A king confers blessings on others. He confers on him not just enough blessing, but truly costly and generous blessing. Let me read these verses to you again, verse 5 through 8. King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. Please picture this. Picture Mephibosheth. By the way, we already said our one Hebrew word today, so sorry. Can't say Mephibosheth. You'll have to do it on your car ride on the way home. It is fun, I will tell you. Okay, but you say it later. Mephibosheth is lying prostrate before David. He's been afraid. He's been in hiding. He got hurt because he got dropped as they were fleeing. He's been in hiding. He comes before David. He lays before him. He's terrified, so much so that David says to him, "Do not be afraid." That's a giveaway that he was afraid, right? So he's afraid. Verse 7, David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul your father, and you shall eat at my table always." And he paid homage and said, this is Mephibosheth, "What is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I?" Mephibosheth had this low self-image, probably because when anyone introduces him, they remind everyone and him he's lame in both his feet. He's in hiding. He's ashamed. His name, by the way, it literally means one who destroys shame, ironically. He's the grandson of King Saul, the son of Jonathan, at one time a person of dignity and royalty and nobility. And here he is, hiding, scared, terrified, ashamed. His name means one who defeats shame. David tells him, "Do not fear." Then he gives him three costly, generous blessings. Did you see them there? The first one, he says, "I will show you kindness." Now, I wonder what that word means. We've discussed it. Loving kindness, chesed, because of Jonathan. He then says, "I will give you all of King Saul's land." All the land that the king of this country previously owned, I'm giving to you. This is politically risky. Then he says, "You will eat at my table always." It's costly. It's generous. It lifts you up. God's loving kindness does this. To love Mephibosheth like this really cost David something. He's not tipping Mephibosheth. He's giving him land that probably came into David's possession since it was the king's land, and he's giving it all to him. He's saying to him he can be at all of his family meals, not on Sundays, every night. Every night. He's inviting him into his family. Just letting him live would have certainly checked the box of fulfilling the promise David made to Jonathan in most people's views. But David doesn't do that. What he does is costly and generous. He goes way beyond, and he literally lifts Mephibosheth up off the ground as he confers on him this generous and costly blessing to this crippled member of an opposing family. Does this not sound familiar, brothers and sisters? This is a picture of the gospel. We're illustrating God's loving kindness. We just saw that it's costly and generous. It lifts us up. We saw before that it's faithful, that it's otherworldly. But let's look now at this third part of God's loving kindness. It's purposeful and personal, and it pulls me in. It seeks me out, it lifts me up, and it pulls me in. So we're almost done with this illustration of God's loving kindness. We're almost done studying these verses in this chapter, but look, there's more. David does not just give Mephibosheth the land and the status. He goes further, just like God does with his blessings. And his gift to Mephibosheth is actually thoughtful, purpose-filled, and profoundly personal. He gives him servants to work the land, a wife, a kid, brothers and sisters at the king's table. It's amazing. Let's read these verses again. "Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, 'All that belonged to Saul and to his house I have given to your master's grandson.'" Can you picture Ziba? He's like, ah. but I got a plan for you, Ziba. He says, and you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Ziba said to the king, because in reality this was still an honorable calling that Ziba just received too. Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. It seems like they're repeating that for a reason. Now he was lame in both his feet. Interesting way to end it, right there on the lameness. So David hires 36 staff for Mephibosheth. There's Ziba, there's his 15 sons, and there's 20 servants. It's purposeful. David's loving kindness toward Mephibosheth is purposeful. He gives him a purpose of fatherhood. He enables Mephibosheth to live in such a way where he's not in hiding and afraid, but he's flourishing and secure, and he has a son. And to do that, he has a wife. And so he gives him this purpose of a family. Can you picture Jonathan's grandson Micah running through the palace as this evidence and witness of David's keeping of this covenant with Jonathan? It's personal. Mephibosheth is pulled into the royal family. He's not kept at a distance. He's like, look, I'll keep the covenant, but keep off the property. No, he pulls him in. He pulls him in because loving kindness does that. It says he ate with the king. And it ends here with pointing out his handicap, his disability at the end of chapter 9 in verse 13. And that's important for us to see that he ends there. Because it's an important reminder for us of how God's loving kindness really does work. We don't earn it. We don't belong at the table. I was recently looking into doing a very grown-up thing and refinancing our house, which is something with the bank, and it's just not worth talking about in the midst of a sermon. But I was talking with the guy, and he's like, yeah, to do this, you got to like show us some proof, like your pay stubs and, you know, your current debt to asset ratio and all this stuff, right? And I was like, actually kind of excited because we've done some things and we've worked really hard. And I feel like probably when I slide those things over to him, he's going to realize, okay, like these people aren't rich, but they can sit at the table. And I was kind of like looking forward to it. I'm like, all right, yeah, let me go get that for you, bro. Let me get that. I'll get that right over to you. Would you like that to be, would you like me to have a courier bring it over to you? Like, I will get that to you. Kind of excited. Thinking, this could go well. Thinking, I belong at the table. Sure, I'll provide identification and proof. But it's not that way in the kingdom. We should not feel that way about our seat at the table in the kingdom. You see David's, or Mephibosheth's response, he's like, who am I that you would show a dead dog loving kindness? He didn't belong at the table. It was grace upon grace, God's loving kindness. And so, friends, it is with us in God's kingdom. As followers of Christ, really, just like Mephibosheth, we've been given purpose to go and make disciples. We've been pulled into the family of God to feast at the table of King Jesus Christ. And that leads to the end of this sort of illustration of God's loving kindness. But before I move on to application, I want to ask an important question. I think you need to ask this question when you study a great story like this one in 2 Samuel 7. And it's this: what is this illustration about? Like, really, what's the point of it? Is this just a nice story with a good moral to it? Oh, I love the way you connected it with Jesus, right? But couldn't you connect almost any story that's really good and inspiring to Jesus? Maybe. I mean, like, every world religion has great inspiring stories. Get a degree in world religion and you'll see. Buddha was extremely altruistic. So what is this illustration really pointing us to? And I think it's important that we just take a moment and think about that. Because this is a story in the Bible book of 2 Samuel, from which God's covenant people, Israel, they take enormous comfort in hearing through this story. What do they hear? They don't hear about Jesus. They don't know about Jesus yet. What do they hear? Here's what they hear. They hear how their God treats his people with a transformational, loving kindness. Remember, David said, "Who can I show God's loving kindness to?" The story is not that David was kind. It was that God's loving kindness was being channeled through David. Spoiler alert, David is about to, in chapter 11, fail miserably as the king of Israel. And his sons and descendants after him are going to pilot the nation of Israel to the bottom of the ocean politically. So whether you are sitting in exile in Babylon as an Israelite in the 8th century, whether you are under Roman rule in the 1st century reading 2 Samuel, or whether you are in a closed to the gospel country, or even in parts of America in the 21st century, we as God's people always need the truth of 2 Samuel 9, that God's transformational loving kindness seeks you out, lifts you up, and pulls you in. And of course, we see in Christ this ancestor, this descendant in the line of David, the greater David. Of course, we see the greater fulfillment of God's loving kindness to his people. Through the preaching of the gospel, Jesus has and is seeking you out. Through the costly death on the cross in your place, and through the resurrection from the grave, Jesus can and has lifted you up. And through his church, Jesus has pulled you in, into his purpose, into his bigger and greater mission, into his family, to his table. And so what do we do with this? How do we apply this? And very quickly, application of God's loving kindness. And the first one is this. We humbly receive it. We humbly receive it. David did. In 2 Samuel 7, God makes this covenant of loving kindness with David. And David, in the second half of chapter 7, goes into the temple and sits down in the presence of the Lord and says, "Who am I and what is my family that you would choose me?" He humbly received it. Mephibosheth, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, verse 8, he says, "Who am I that you would show this loving kindness to me, a dead dog?" These guys did not deserve it. They knew they didn't. They humbly received it. And if you think about it, they could have not. They could have not received it in their pride. No, I think I'll have to admit that I'm a shepherd boy and not a king if I receive your loving kindness in that way. I think I'll have to admit that I'm a crippled, dead dog if I receive your loving kindness today. I'd rather keep fronting. I'd rather keep faking. I'd rather keep putting up this image that I'm good. Humbly receive it. You cannot do it, but you should. Will you? Psalm 86, verse 5 says, "You, O Lord, are good and forgiving and abounding in steadfast love to all who call upon you." So the first application is like, we've got to humbly receive God's loving kindness. And so I challenge you, have you done that? For sure. Are you wanting to be sure to do that again? Receive. And the second thing is share it. Share it. Think about what David says in verse 1 of 2 Samuel chapter 9 and bring that into your life. He says, is there anyone of, and he says, the line of Saul. But maybe we should just write a blank there and you can just insert rival, dissenter, enemy, weak person, person I don't want to show love to. Just, is there anyone of blank that I may show them God's loving kindness? And that's an application. That's a homework assignment for every person this week to share it. To share it. When we receive it, we cannot help but share it. It's reflexive. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. And so friends, we're going to close out with singing, and I'm going to close in prayer, and the band will come up. I want to read to you the big idea again, just a reminder so you leave with this. Against the odds of this world, you and me can receive and can share God's transformational loving kindness.